This is the Page Publishing Book Club. How you doing? I'm Alice Stockton Rossini. Incest. It's an uncomfortable topic. It's an uncomfortable word. But according to the Justice Department, 93% of juvenile sex assault victims know their attacker. And just over 34% are family members. And whatever notions you have about what constitutes incest, you may be shaken with Nicole Jackson's book, Speak Incest Out Loud. A registered nurse in California, she started telling her story with the help of a ghostwriter and then decided her story needed her voice.
First of all, there have been several people who have told me their stories of childhood sexual abuse, many of them incest stories like my own, without them even knowing my story first. And all of my life, I've been the person in my family who always spoke out about any and everything, including this abuse. And when I realized as an adult, I was meeting so many people who were living what I call white knuckled. You know, for me, it was wearing masks. You know, you're working so hard to keep this horrific story secret, private, quiet. And after I had started my healing journey, I thought, we don't have to live this way. We don't have to keep the secret. And that's what keeps, you know, the perpetrators able to prey upon potential victims, potential family members. And so in supporting people by telling my story so that they can begin to speak their truth, prayerfully, legacies will be broken in other families to prevent this ugly thing from happening. Because one thing about a predator, they are cowards, and they instill so much fear into their prey, leaving us not realizing the power that we have in our voice.
You were 3 years old?
Yes. My father coming in a room in the middle of the night, kissing me inappropriately. That was the first experience I recall. Nothing ongoing from there, but laying the groundwork for future abuse.
Did you tell anyone?
Oh, yes. That morning I came down and said in the middle of the living room, you know, I jumped somebody to kiss me and they taste like orange sherbet last night. And the room froze and no one said a word. My mom was in the next room and heard it, you know, and no one said anything. So nothing occurred for a while, but it became inappropriate kisses in front of the family while we're sitting in the evening watching television shows. Or it became tickling games in inappropriate places. And that went on for years, but right out in the open. So as a child of 3, 4, 5, 6, you don't know that that's not normal, you know.
And your mom saw this, right?
Inappropriate play, absolutely.
And
absolutely.
And didn't say anything or do anything?
No, and there's a point in the book where I discuss, and this was after the more inappropriate touches and cornering me and that type of things had been occurring. And she had to go out of town and I, you know, begged her not to go. I begged her to take me with her and she wouldn't. And I finally told her, Daddy kisses me. And she says, well, honey, your daddy loves you. And just, you know, kept it moving. So it's a lot of abandonment by my mother and her not protecting me in that situation. You know, when you look at the definition of incest, it's intercourse between family members, basically. And everything occurred up to that point. And so whether someone penetrates a young body or not, anything that happens up until that point that is sexually inappropriate is incest.
So you share this in the hope of giving others the strength to come forward.
Yes, absolutely, because it's not my shame. It's not my burden. It's not my malbehavior. That belongs to him. And in healing me, I have to realize that I don't have to carry that. And what has allowed it to permeate generation after generation in some families is the silence. That's what gives the predators power. And so when I first started this work, I would speak in a normal tone and I would whisper the word incest because I just hated the word. You know, I would shriek from it. And I have learned that saying that word isn't shame on me. Shame on the predator, shame on people who knew and did not move on it. So that's where I operate from, because there are a lot of people who haven't healed that space in them. And so their life is being conducted by that injured child. all of my anger and rage and different things in my life was ruled by that young person. And until I was able to heal her and remove her from the shadows of shame, of incest, I wouldn't be able to live a functional, healthy, happy, peaceful life.
Were you ever able to confront him and your mom?
When I was in college, I came home and there was a disagreement completely unrelated to the abuse, but it was related to his control of me, because now this was the only way he could control me now that I was out of the home. And all that rage from years of abuse up to the age of 15 uncorked, you know, and I just screamed that you don't want me to go out with this person because you're jealous because you can't have me yourself. And my mother hit the deck. My father hit the deck. My sister was like, heads were whirling. And I left the home and I was life in my observation for the rest of them just kept moving. For me, looking on, my mother, she was still my father's wife. They still shared a room. My sister was still in the home. So, you know, and that's the whole point. Many survive, but I want folks to move from survival to peace and healing and joy. And that's my goal, is to support that transition from survival to healing. And healing is never healed. It's ongoing. You know, I am a part of several groups. I do have a Facebook page. I'm on Instagram. Interestingly enough, you know, Twitter, my account has been suspended because that word incest is putting, you know, platforms into a tailspin. So even my email is speakincestoutloud@gmail.com has been accepted by most platforms, but I think with upgrades, it's starting to get kicked back. And so with notoriety, I can, you know, use the acronym. But right now, SIOL, people say, what does that mean? You know, right. So.
Well, I give you credit for sharing your story, Nicole. Takes guts. Thank you. A personal trainer for 20 years, Dennis Patrick Rogers, is getting people in the San Francisco Bay Area in shape. The title of his book really says it all. How to be fit, trim, and possibly immortal. Lessons from 7 decades of training, racing, and coaching. That's a long time. So how old are you?
It is a long time. I'm 70, and I did my first competitions in the late 1950s. Swimming, running, high jumping, baseball, basketball, football. And back in those days, we played every sport in its season. Now kids get into a sport and they dedicate their whole life to it.
No, their parents dedicate their whole life to it.
And then you are correct.
And then they have repetitive stress injuries.
That's exactly right. That's one of the things I mentioned in the book. The most important thing about athletic training, the two most important things, first of all, is proper sleep habits. But second is proper recovery, which obviously includes sleep. But when kids start doing gymnastics and ballet and basketball or whatever sport they're doing, and they're doing it 7 days a week at the age of 7, 8, 9, and 10, the kids that I swam, worked out at swim practice with, who were 7 and 8 years old, and you know, we were doing 50 to 100,000 yards a week.
Oh, my God.
And it was year-round.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I start off by talking about the history of exercise physiology, which I consider to be the second youngest science on the planet. We knew so little when I was a kid that I did virtually everything wrong. And consequently, even though I was a top-notch competitor as a kid, as I look back at the worlds and national records in some of the sports I participated in, I couldn't make anybody's team these days with those kind of performances, because we've just learned so much more about diet, exercise, physiology, all of it. When I was a kid, my diet was probably 75% sugar. And in the 1950s, that was considered a good thing. Okay. Don't eat any fat. You know, as a result, I've had some issues over the years. I've pretty much got them all resolved by cleaning that up, but I still see a lot of people going down the wrong path. I spend a lot of time on nutrition because even today, the major organizations, American Heart, Cancer Society, and so forth, are still pushing a diet that is extremely unhealthy. And I've worked with some major weight loss issues. I've had clients who've lost 100 to 200 pounds. and simply by correcting the mistakes. So reducing carbohydrates and primarily reducing the number of times that we eat in the course of a week. Three meals a day is too many. Six meals a day, which is being pushed by a lot of dietary organizations, is absolutely insane. Your body chemistry needs to vacillate, and it can't do that if we don't take some time off from eating. I personally do a 4 to 7 day fast four times a year. One of the mistakes I made was I just spent too much time exercising. I was an Ironman triathlete as well as being a swimmer and long distance runner in my youth. And, you know, there were weeks when I was training 40 to 45 hours. It kind of limits what else you can do with your life. And I suppose if you're Michael Phelps, it pays off. But for most people, it doesn't. In terms of overall health, you're better off getting in 30 to 60 minutes of aerobic exercise, maybe 4 to 7 days a week, and then a lesser amount of very high intensity, whether it's sprinting or weightlifting or something of that nature, maybe 3 days a week.
Do you talk about the stomach surgeries?
Absolutely. If you have a gastric band, you end up eating six meals a day, which is horrendously bad for you. I've had clients who went that route because they just didn't have the patience to do it my way. And there are a number of problems that will plague you for the rest of your life once you've had that surgery. And the gastric band limits the amount that you can eat initially, but you can certainly restretch your stomach even with the gastric band. And so a lot of the people that I've seen who have gone that route have lost maybe half of what they really needed to lose. And usually it's somebody who's terribly obese, maybe 250 to 300 pounds overweight. So they'll lose 100 pounds, but they're still not going to have a decent life expectancy. My first advice, and I didn't invent the idea, was just eat real food. You should read the ingredient label carefully, because if there's an ingredient label, it probably isn't real food. And so, yes, the high fructose corn syrup is, you know, right up there with Roundup as one of the most insane things that we've done to ourselves.
Yeah.
Part of the problem is the high levels of carbohydrates. The major dietary organizations still recommend a 55% carbohydrate diet. And that's just not something any humans have eaten on this planet other than the last 50 to 70 years. I would love for this book to sell a million copies and change a lot of people's lives, but we just have to see if that can happen. If our esteemed governor ever decides to allow us to go back to our regular business, I probably can sell a lot of books at the gym. We have 6,000 members, but currently we're closed.
Well, hopefully by the time this interview airs, Dennis, you will be open and you will be back to work. Thanks. A clean, clear, safe earth that benefits everyone is the dream of our next author, who poured three decades of experience into his book entitled The Fourth Way, a comprehensive humanitarian economic system to save the world.
I'm Dr. A. Joseph Kerrio. I am from Windsor, Ontario, Canada. I am a business and economic consultant, and I work with international business development, and I am economic researcher. The most important and precious existence on the earth is the human. And I ask myself, are we truly taking care of humans? What does it need to have a good life for a human? Where we are from humanity? Too many questions when we all see wars, crisis, destruction, so on. I thought maybe the new era of economic system could help. Hopefully, we all could have better, healthy world free of physical, social, economic, and political diseases to prove the value of a human. My book is the result of the effort spanning more than 7 years. It is loaded with research and studies tracking events all around the world, monitoring the war, crisis, and international problems, and pursuing the details of their intensification and development. The book includes an accurate, detailed, comprehensive, and deep description of all the international movements that have covered the world since the outbreak of the First World War until mid of 2017. And documents the history of all revolutions, calls, and economic ideas. One of the main objectives of this book is to rely on successes and failure of these experiences, seeking a human economic, political, and social system, a system that is fair, clean, moral, honorable, and rational, to restore economic value to economic factors in managing the affairs of state and people, to restore individual value in life and create a healthy individual actor and producer, restore the balance to the environment, restore the United Nations, and activate its institutions and its role in solving the international dilemmas. The exploration of modern economic history and the challenges faced by contemporary population around the globe. This book is documented, historian reference, and full description of all the mechanism of applying this system, which can be a clear guide for economists, historians, politics, sociologists, and individual. The most important principle of the fourth way system is every system doesn't assure the service of humanity and it is good are considered invalid. And every law isn't for good of a humanity is invalid. A thought-provoking analysis of modern economic conditions contrasted with economic and humanitarian ideals and the steps required to achieve them. The pillars are humanity, ethic, justice, totalitarianism, and state attention for the individual, a human dignity.
I mean, it sounds great, but don't you need a lot of cooperation from a lot of countries and a lot of people for this to happen?
Yes, that's right. Actually, if we think about when we are called as a human has to have moral, has to have a feeling, has to cooperate. I believe I depend on the good people around the world that maybe take advantage of this new economic theory, which has the full comprehensive system. It's the theory, philosophy, and mechanism, and the pillars. And it's all there. It's national and international. It is good for everyone. It suits everybody. It doesn't stand against any belief. It's with the human. It's for the human. It's for people. Nobody would say no for good things for them. That's what I believe. I hope that's going to help our nation for future, all nation to have better living and better life.
Me too. Yeah. How do you get the book out there? How do you get people talking about it?
Well, I'm working so much in social media, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and Goodreads, and the website, and Amazon page. Mostly everything I can do. Like everything I think is good, I'm doing it. I'm posting every week. Sometimes I do little paid ads, small money spent here and there. Uh-huh. I have like few thousand of followers at this time.
That's great.
Go ahead. Yeah.
So maybe you'll get enough momentum that you can actually start to make some of this a reality.
I hope so. Because
me too.
It's my, my dream since 35 years with my career, that to have a clean, a clear, safe earth for everyone on the earth. Would respect everybody believe. We don't mind everybody believe to what they like, but we want to feed them, we want to teach them, we want to give them good life, you know, just to make them good for themselves, for their society, for world society. Why not?
Why not? I'm sure there's somebody out there who can tell you why not. That's the problem.
I know. There is lots, but well, we have to do our part anyway. Everybody has to do their part, and then hopefully we get there by sometime.
All right. Something to think about as we take a very short break. This is the Page Publishing Book Club.
Attention all authors. Page Publishing is looking for authors. Have you written a book and want to get it published? Page Publishing will get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, Apple, iTunes, and other outlets. They handle all aspects of the publishing process for you. Printing, cover art, publicity, copyright, and editing. Call 800-204-6099 now for your free author submission kit. That's 800-204-6099 for your free author submission kit.
We're back on the Page Publishing Book Club. I'm Alice Stockton Rossini. A fan of Stan Lee, as you may or may not know, was the president and publisher of Marvel Comics, co-creator of Spider-Man, the Hulk, and Fantastic Four, to name a few, decided to take a stab at sci-fi in her book, Emma, The Hires, Part 1 of 8.
My name is Teresa Balthazar. I live in North Carolina. Currently, right now, I am not working. I am staying home with my kids. They're doing virtual school.
So what was it about Stan Lee that inspired you?
I love all his work. I love Marvel. I loved X-Men growing up. I mean, who wouldn't want to be a superhero? I thought that was pretty amazing. Rogue was my favorite character. I love Rogue. I started writing because I was a stay-at-home mom at the time, and I was pretty bored. So I've been watching, you know, like Marvel and X-Men and all that, and it just inspired me to write sci-fi myself. So my book is about Jason and Emma. Jason is a bachelor. He falls in love with Emma. Emma is a troubled woman, and she gives up on life. And Jason pretty much saves her and tells her, you know, there's reasons to live. He's a teleporter. Also, he's telekinetic. So he saves Emma because she jumps off the bridge, and he goes after her and teleports her back to his loft in San Francisco. And the government, they are trying to capture hires, which I call them higher beings. They capture hires, and they try to duplicate their abilities, and, you know, they want to use their abilities to their advantage. So in time, you know, Jason, he gets captured by the government, and they're kind of pretty much threatening him. You know, if you don't do this, then we can pretty much kill Emma. We know where she is. So he's basically, you know, doing all this for Emma. He's trying to protect her. There are 8 total books, and it just gets crazier from here on out. You know, Jason, he's trying to come up with a way to escape. So the government are not after them, pretty much. So while he's in prison, you know, he has to come up with a way to kind of just be free. So he has to go through all these things to make sure that, you know, when he returns to Emma, you know, that they're off the grid, pretty much. It's about dealing with depression, you know, with Emma. You know, she was really depressed growing up as a child. And I think a lot of people can relate, and it's, you know, never to give up on what you believe.
Always a good message. Thanks, Emma. And we have another fantasy sci-fi fan. Julie Hamlin of Farmington, New Mexico, was forever writing stories in her head and finally decided it was time to put one down on paper. It's entitled Fiery Winds of Chaos. So what was your inspiration?
Dungeons and Dragons, Lord of the Rings. Lord of the Rings is one of my favorite stories, so it inspired me a lot in my current story. I've actually been working on this story for several years. It's finally come to fruition. It's taken kind of like medieval time period, Dungeons and Dragons, Lord of the Rings type setting. My main character is Calidor Blackfury. He's a prince from one small nation, but is driven. He has a strong sense that he needs to do something at this country across the ocean. He likes to travel. And when he gets there, it's a war-torn country. There's a lot of civil unrest from the previous king who was abusing his power. And there's also a lot of orcs and goblins that have been popping up and causing even more trouble. And he has a unique heritage. He's half dragon, half human. Calls himself a dragon mage because he has the power of a dragon but can wield it like similar to a human wizard without the spell. So he's using his powers to help this country, Galia, that he's in. He's also half Borok, which is an evil creature of the Underdark, a place miles below the surface. So his unique heritage allows him to sense the evil around him, and he uses that, both his natures, it's a dual nature, to eradicate the evil, to bring peace to the land. He also has 10 men that he picked out from the army he's serving in Galia, to form into what he calls the Dragon Brigade. He gives them special training to make them better fighters, gives them enchanted weapons and armors to help them fight better, and uses that to not only defeat the evil in the land, but help bring peace to the people that are downtrodden and have no hope left. And so he's helping on home front and on the battlefield to bring peace to the land. Well, it's a series. I'm not sure how long it'll be yet. I'm imagining at least 7 to 8 books long. So it's an epic fantasy. I'm going to be getting a website up soon, I hope, that I can start advertising more online. At some point, I would love to make my story into a movie and a game, because it has a lot of game elements, though. Like Skyrim type thing, where it's the role-playing. Because I have several different characters. I have the magic to play with. I have sword fighting. I have horseback riding. Dungeons and dragons and orcs and goblins and all that. Bandit. Elder Scrolls. That's a big one that I enjoy playing, that a lot of people do.
Well, who are you in this?
My main character, Kalidor, because he has the coolest powers. But like I said, the 10 men that he brings up, they each have unique abilities. So each of them would be a character you'd be able to play or at least switch out into, depending on where you're at in the game. They'd have some unique abilities themselves that they could play. And like I said, Kalidor has his dragon magic as well as his Bolrock magic that he can play with. And they both have their own unique styles of wielding the magic. And he usually, in the story, uses his dragon magic. It's the easiest to use. He's most familiar with it. So he hasn't done too much with his Bolrock magic. But in the story, he discovers that there's probably a Bolrock behind all these goblins and orcs coming up that he might have to fight. So he has to start learning better how to use his Bolrock magic and the spells with them. So in the book, he starts learning. So in the game, he'd be learning these spells that he has a rudimentary knowledge of, but hasn't really played with forever. Oh, he's 124 in the book, but he looks like he's 21, because his magic slows the aging process down. He's been around a long time, traveled all over the world, or at least on his side of the continent, where his home country is. And now he's exploring some new territories.
I want some of that.
Yeah.
All right, Julie, that's a wrap for this edition of the Page Publishing Book Club. Great authors, lots of imagination, some hints that maybe some areas of the country will be able to pull off some socially appropriate book signings in the near future. I don't know. We'll keep you posted. Thank you for dropping by. If you missed anything, just go to 710WOR.com and download the podcast. I'm Alice Stockton-Rossini.